Mankind have been fermenting grapes into wines for thousands of years. Ancient cultures used wines as means for communicating with their gods. And even today, we can find references to wine as a status symbol. It is often portrayed as the drink of choice for the culture, the educated, the wealthy and sophisticated man. But trends are changing as globalization has brought about a democratization of wines. I'm Christy Yai, and today we're going to be exploring the wonderful world of wines from the top producers to the top consumers. Four countries, Italy, Spain, France, and the US, produce more than half the wine in the world. Italy produces over 44 million hectoliters of wine a year, followed by Spain at 35 million hectoliters, France at 34.2, and the US at 24.1 hectoliters. And these four countries are not surprisingly also huge consumers of wine as well. But if we break down consumption by capita, Portugal is actually the biggest winner at 51.9 liters per capita, followed by Italy and France. While traditionally wine has been cultivated in Europe, production and consumption has been expanding into the Southern Hemisphere. South Africa is now the eighth largest wine producer in the world and the sixth largest exporter of wine. But lately, its 300-year-old wine industry is being crushed by rolling blackouts that are delaying harvesting, bottling, and labeling. The interrupted power also impacts the watering of the vines, which stresses out the plants and reduces the size and number of fruit. This will have a big impact on the producer profitability as harvest will be lower. Once harvested, the grapes can become overripe or damaged if refrigeration or climate control is interrupted. The power cuts can lead to temperature fluctuations, which can adversely affect the fermentation process, resulting in off-flavor barrels. The South African wine industry, as a result, have increased wine prices by 7% this year. The wine industry contributed more than $3.1 billion to the nation's gross domestic product last year, with exports worth 10 billion rand. The 2023 harvest is estimated at 1.2 million tons, which is 14% smaller than last year's due to a lack of electricity in intensely irrigated areas. Officials are now concerned that irrigated wine grape production isn't sustainable if load shedding gets worse. The UK continues to be South Africa's largest wine export market and bucked the wider global trend by increasing their imports for wine by 8% last year, despite the higher prices. Even though South African wines are mostly consumed locally, there is one winemaker trying to make it a global trend. We are joined by award-winning winemaker Carmen Stevens from Carmen Stevens Wines to explore some more of the African wine market. So, Carmen, what got you into the wine business and made you a successful award-winning winemaker in South Africa?
So, what got me into wine was reading novels. So, I come from a very poor background where wine was never part of my upbringing. But I knew about wine because wine had a very negative impact on our communities. What attracted me to wine was, I think, the opulence that comes with wine. You know, it's everything is green, everything is beautiful. You know, there's amazing people, there's amazing food, wine, amazing regions of the world. That really is, if I think back now, that is probably what triggered me, because the community where I grew up in, we did not have that. I liked what wine represented to me in those novels.
What does the future hold for South African wine industry?
The future for South Africa, I think, in terms of wine is quite bright. There's a lot of young and upcoming, energetic, dynamic, new, younger generation of winemakers coming into the sector. They travel a lot, they love to experiment, they try to showcase what South Africa can offer. There's a lot of focus on Chenin Blanc and how to make Chenin Blanc great out of South Africa and how to improve on what we already have. So I think this new generation of looking and approaching wine is very different. And I think it's going to add differently to our, say, our growth in the international market space.
And how does the cost of producing wine vary across different wine-producing regions around the world?
That's a very difficult question or answer to that question. But what I can tell you is that in South Africa, there's so many accreditations that's needed for our wines. And I feel, this is my personal opinion, is that the world is almost too hard on South Africa because we have to have so many accreditations in place. And with that comes, how ethical are we in our winemaking? How ethical do we treat our workers? What is the working conditions, which is perfect. I want to make it very clear that South Africa has always been on top of its game when it comes to conditions of work, looking at what people gets paid. But I think in every country you get your wine, some of the wine people that does not conform. It's not just in South Africa. And yet South Africa is being, you know, almost the focus is more on what is negative in the South African wine industry than what is positive in South African wine industry. And that brings us about how ethical is the world when it looks at South Africa in terms of pricing of our wines, because we make amazing wines. Our wines have always over-delivered in terms of quality. Yet, we do not see the same revenue coming back to this country because the rest of the world look at us and say, but it's a third world country and we can get away with paying as little as possible for amazing wine. Now, if you come to me and you ask me how ethical you are, then you need to also ask yourself, how ethical is the buyer? Because if you can sell a South African product in your shops for less money, or you buy for less money and yet you are putting it on your shelf, so much higher markup, how ethical is that from your side? And is the world not part of the problem of South Africa, where people are not being treated fairly in terms of a living wage? What is the world's role in making that more of an ethical trading, what do you call it, trading terms? Because everything cannot just come from out of our pockets. Do you know that our growers are ripping up vines because sustainability has gone out the door? We keep on producing wines. The world wants our wines. The consumer wants our wines. But we're not getting paid for what we deliver. And that, for me, is the critical point here. And that, for me, says we need to speak to the consumer. Does the consumer understand the word ethical and their role in being ethical to workers, not just in South Africa, in Argentina and Chile and all these countries where your wines are being bought at such a lower price point and sold at a much higher price point? And who's making that money? Because it's definitely, in our case, not South Africa.
Are there specific regions known for producing wines more efficiently, resulting in lower production costs?
So South Africa is one of those countries where labor is still very cheap. So we have a huge workforce. We have a huge unemployment rate. Winemaking, in many cases, is a seasonal thing. So we I would say South Africa, in terms of what we can do with our labor force, makes our product probably a little bit less costly. But that doesn't mean it tastes, the taste isn't there. We over-deliver on quality. We have the ability to bring in people that pick with their hands. Sorting of fruit in the cellar, that's done by people in the cellar. So the fact that we have a workforce that can do that at really what they call a minimum wage makes us one of those countries when it comes to costing, probably, more affordable.
Now, in the past, France and Italy were known as having the best and most premium wines. Is that still the case, or is there another country that's giving it a run for its money?
I think as the world evolves and as winemakers are traveling and sharing knowledge and sharing experiences, more and more countries like South Africa is coming to the fore. I think that on a quality perspective, we can compete against anybody. If you choose, obviously there's different quality brackets. But if you put us up in any quality bracket against another country like Italy, like France, I think the world will be shocked at what we really are producing and how more affordable the same quality product is from a country like South Africa in comparison to Italy and France. I don't think we have to stand back for anybody. I think we are producing amazing wines, and I think retailers are noticing that. And I think that is why there's such a huge inquiry into South African wines.
What countries are experiencing significant growth in their wine industries, and what's contributing to this growth?
So I believe that New Zealand is really, really booming. New Zealand is planting new vineyards, more vineyards. New Zealand is really investing in new wineries that's up and coming. And not small wineries, huge establishments, and the reason for that is because there's still very much a huge request for New Zealand, especially for Sauvignon Blanc and the style of Sauvignon Blanc that they produce. That said, I don't necessarily think that South Africa is far behind in terms of quality. No. I think it's just they market themselves quite well. And I would say the top segment is quite outstanding Sauvignon Blancs. And because of that investment and that pursuit of the consumer for that product, they have the ability to grow. They have the ability to invest, plant new vines. In our case, we must pull it out because we don't get, we're not. What people are willing to pay for our product doesn't make us really so sustainable.
Thank you so much, Carmen, but please stick around. Winemaker Carmen Stevens will stay with us right after the break. And when we come back, in recent years, wine has captured the palates of Asian consumers worldwide. Don't go away.
there's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy.
Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are you living on, man?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
While wine is ubiquitous in the Western world, there aren't many Asian wines. But there's a very good reason for that. Most Asian countries are closer to the equator, where they experience more tropical climates with plenty of rainfall. This is not conducive to the production of grapes. Also, many countries have extreme changes in temperature and climates with monsoons and typhoons. So because of this, wine is predominantly a Western or European alcoholic beverage. But in recent years with globalization, wine has begun to capture the interest of the growing middle class. China has quickly become one of the largest consumers of wine, and in recent years have also started to produce wine as well. And this is not an easy feat, as the vines must be buried through the winter in order to stay alive during the extremely cold and dry winters. China is ranked 9th in terms of wine consumption by country, and for years it's turned to Australian wine, quickly becoming its biggest buyer and importing 40% of Australia's total wine exports. But in 2020, after the Australian Prime Minister at the time called for an investigation into COVID's origin, Beijing became furious at them for playing political games meant to assign blame. In response, China imposed a punitive tariff on 116% to 218% on Australian wine, and the country's biggest overseas market vanished almost immediately. Sales to China plummeted 97% that first year. Australian grape growers are still suffering today as a result, as this year there is even less demand for red wine. Farmers are facing a choice between selling grapes at a huge loss or keeping costs to a minimum and not even harvesting. And while many are focusing on the markets in the US, Thailand, Singapore, and Malaysia, none of them are big enough to fill the gap left by China. There is still about a 25% surplus of national wine grape crop with no obvious destination. China has instead turned to South African and the U.S. wines to fill its demand. Meanwhile, Japan is leading Asian nations in wine imports in 2022, when it saw a 31% increase in the value of imported wine and an 8.9% rise in volume. The Japan wine market is projected to exhibit a growth rate of 6.3% through 2028 as the changing consumer preferences toward Western beverages and rising wine tourism drives the market. Japanese consumers have been shifting away from traditional alcoholic beverages like sake and beer and instead embracing wine, especially among the younger generation who are more health conscious. French and Chilean wine are the largest share of Japanese imports of wine at 29 and 26% respectively. For this and more, let's bring in again award-winning winemaker Carmen Stevens from Carmen Stevens Wines. So how do market demands and consumer preferences influence the growth trajectory of different wine-producing countries?
It speaks to New Zealand, it speaks to demand for that product, it speaks to the growth, the consumer wants it. Everywhere in the world, people are still looking for New Zealand, the New Zealand style of Sauvignon Blanc coming out of that country. And that makes it more and more people want it, bigger investment for them, bigger growth for them. Absolutely.
And what are some of the challenges faced by winemakers in different regions that impact their production costs?
So I think different countries have different challenges. In our case, we had a challenge with water not so long ago. You know, resources in terms of water, electricity, For other countries, it might be that they have a bad year and they have to mitigate that. But I do believe that things balance themselves out. Again, coming back to South Africa, our biggest challenge is probably we have two bottle suppliers. If we want to bring in bottles, it's such an extra cost, you know. So our challenge is how to get our product to the market in the most efficient, cost-efficient way. And because if you take a shipment from South Africa to Europe, it takes about 6 weeks. That is our challenge. Whereas in Europe, you know, and fantastic trade agreements that is in place, it makes the flow of getting the product to the market so much easier and much more cost effective for them.
How do foreign investors influence the wine production or the industry?
So there's been not an influx, but a steady growth or a steady interest of foreign investors into South Africa, into the winelands, because you get really amazing, amazing terroirs in South Africa. If you compare it to what it would cost you to have that in France or anywhere else in the world, it's at a small fraction of the price that people pay in Europe. So I think a lot of investors are seeing the potential in South Africa. They see that it's like I said, a fraction of the price. And we are definitely seeing more investments specifically in South African agriculture land for wine. It's good for us. I think it's fantastic that the world is really looking into South Africa for that, you know, for the future, for growth in the South African wine industry. And I hope that that would open more markets for South African wines, because a lot of the people that is investing already has access to market. And if they can take the South African product out into more markets and give it more of a presence, fantastic for us.
And Carmen, how has the rise of e-commerce platforms impacted wine sales and distribution?
Absolutely. And I think the best example of that is during COVID, you know. Suddenly, I don't know if you know, but in South Africa for quite some time, we were not allowed to sell wines. So the restaurants were closing up. So what happened was that the wineries realized we need to put something else in motion here. And a lot of them launched platforms, online platforms, and sold wine online that was to be delivered after the restrictions was lifted. So the online platforms has really boomed since COVID. It also showed the wineries that was probably not so up to date with the new technology in terms of the internet, how to promote themselves in a much more effective way. It's a cheaper way. They were using social media to also help that on. And suddenly more and more people are using social media and the e-commerce platforms, and they are seeing really positive growth on that, which is fantastic.
Thank you so much, Carmen, for all your time today. Globally, wine is a category that is in slow decline, with fewer and fewer people drinking less wine every year. While economic uncertainties are leading wine consumers to cut back on discretionary spending, it seems that premium wines are still performing significantly better than their lower-priced counterparts. One of the biggest global trends in the drinks sector is moderation. Moderation rates are the highest among the younger wine consumers, with the age group below 34 significantly more likely to reduce their alcohol consumption in some way. However, low-alcohol wine and sparkling wines are growth markets in areas like the US, Germany, Japan, and the UK. So it seems like the wine industry will have to pivot in order to accommodate the tastes of the younger generation in order to avoid being the biggest loser. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.